This is episode 165 with Tamara Fike. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. My mission in life is to help school administrators fight isolation and frustration via a leadership community in order to gain clarity and find solutions to their greatest challenges. I'm also the host of this podcast, and each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show, I talk with Tamara Fike, and we explore a number of interesting topics like relationships with self and others, stop being a control freak, and give yourself time to become who you need to be. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. A lot of school leaders talk about improving student soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Students who participate in the Conrad Challenge don't learn to think outside the box. There is no box. Learn how innovation takes off and soars beyond the confines of a box at conradchallenge.org.
Hey y'all, this is Gretchen from Always a Lessons Empowering Educators podcast. I'm a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts, but make sure you check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com and get ready because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Well, hey there, better leaders. This is Danny Sunshine Bauer, host of the show, and I'm joined today with a new friend I made, and it's been a really wonderful relationship already. We've had some communication things that are all my fault, and so we've had to make a few pivots, and it's turning into an incredible podcast episode. So how neat is that? And let me introduce to you Tamara Fike, who is a creative entrepreneur with a passion for kids, families, and urban communities. Also the creator, author, and brand manager for Love in a Big World. In her early days, Tamara worked as a substitute teacher in Metro Nashville Public Schools. She transitioned to leading community programs as well as in-school support services, program development, and research. Tamara received her master's degree in education from Vanderbilt University's Peabody College of Education and Human Development, and worked at Vanderbilt Center for Safe and Supportive Schools, providing professional development, coaching, and consulting for principals and teachers for issues related to safety and crime. Tamara is the editor of Building People, Social Emotional Learning for Kids, Schools and Communities, a book published by Abingdon Press that brings 12 wide-ranging perspectives on social emotional learning to educators, parents, and leaders. She has a bunch of interests and focus areas, and I'll let you read the full bio on the website. And Tamara, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I'd like to start here. Describe your perfect day at work.
My perfect day at work?
Yes.
So my work is really different, Danny. I work with a number of different organizations providing consulting to them around issues of safety and climate and social emotional learning. So probably my perfect day at work is when I get to be hands-on with administrators, teachers, and kids and helping problem solve what is going on for them in a building or with their organization to help them be more effective in building relationships with one another.
And what's the why underneath all of that? You know, I'm hearing about relationships and everything, but why? Why does that matter so much to you?
Because I think that we need more of a focus on relationships. For me, I was taught, my parents were here in Nashville visiting this weekend, and we were having a conversation about the why yesterday. I think the why is because I really care about people and the connections for people. And it really is about helping people see that we can let down our defenses and actually love one another rather than feel like we have to be on guard with one another. And when we believe the best about each other, whether it's in the school or the workplace, it makes a big difference on what we can learn, how we teach, how we connect with one another. it makes a difference in the climate and the culture.
You know, in that work, you're talking about building relationships, you're talking about love, you're talking about how we relate. Is there some type of framework that you use, the way you see relationships and interacting with each other, that you can unpack for the listeners? Or is there some type of a approach, right, that has really benefited you that you could share with our listeners?
Mm-hmm. Well, with Love in a Big World, which is a nonprofit organization that I founded back in 96, and also the curriculum we have for social and emotional learning, there are 24 different character traits that are really the framework for those relationships. And it's relationships with self, relationships with others. So thinking about things like choice, that I have a choice about how I respond to the way people treat me. Choice is the opportunity and power to make decisions. Thinking about courage, standing up for what is right, facing our fears, honesty, speaking and acting truthfully, kindness, treating others the way we want to be treated, and so on. That really provides a great framework for managing our words, behaviors, and attitudes with each other.
Yeah, it seems to make a lot of sense. You know, when I close each podcast, I say that life's 10% of what happens to you, 90% of how you respond to it. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's getting at the root of that choice thing. But I'm curious, how do you encourage, how do you challenge people to own that, right? Because having the choice, that's power right there. The ownership,
yes, it is.
That's another piece of the power. But for some of us that have been playing the victim for so long or are just so frustrated by, you know, the circumstances we see and all that, we get defeated and we don't think we have power. So I'm curious right. How you approach that.
A couple different ways. So, and I'll give you several different scenarios. When I'm talking with administrators and teachers, it's who can oftentimes feel powerless because of the systems that they're part of. It's kind of like, well, my administration, my central office is requiring me to do this. And the conversation really turns to, okay, well, yeah, you have these requirements, but you have a choice about how you will embrace these requirements. You have a choice about the attitude that you will carry that really does impact the way you interact with your coworkers as well as the kids that you're responsible for. So you can begrudge your administration or your central office, honestly, or you can say, okay, yes, and I'm going to do the best I can with what I've been given to do. So letting them know that even though there's a difference between requirements and feeling like you're stuck. You know what I mean? Those requirements can actually provide a boundary. And I like to think of boundaries as they define you, they give you shape, they let you know who you are. But if you live within those boundaries, the possibilities are endless. So you have, that gives you some freedom of movement. And so anyway, that's with teachers and administrators. With kids, it's really acknowledging when I'm working with kids, I'm telling them all the time, you know what? Life isn't fair. And yeah, you've got a lot of stuff that's gone on in your world that is traumatic. And, you know, whether it's divorce or parents in prison or not having enough food to eat, that all is awful. But how are you going to choose to respond to that? And so it's really looking at life from a risk resiliency standpoint, going back to the research of Hawkins and Catalano back in the early 90s, some of the seminal research for communities that care model. So everybody's at risk. ACEs tells us that, adverse childhood experiences research. Everybody has trauma, but how are we going to respond to that trauma? Are we going to let that trauma define us, or are we instead going to embrace the pain and learn everything that we can from it and let it make us stronger? Resiliency is the ability to bounce back despite adversity. So I actually go there with kids. with kids, and I think they respect the fact that it's hard. And I'm sorry, but here's what we can do from this point on. Are you willing to take that journey? And that empowers them. And it really helps shift their point of view so that they can begin to own the fact that they have choices ahead of them and they get to shape their future.
I know that you mentioned, if I heard you correctly, that Love in a Big World was founded in the late 90s. But can you mm-hmm. tell us the story of why it was founded?
Yes. So I was working as a substitute teacher in Metro Nashville's urban public school system. And I was doing a lot of work in public housing communities areas. And I would have these kinds of conversations about choices with my kids at the end of the day while we were waiting for dismissal. And if you remember that Michelle Pfeiffer movie, Dangerous Minds, had just come out. And so sometimes we would sing at the end of the day, Gangsta's Paradise. Yes, I would sing Gangsta's Paradise with them. You know, we all had our parts. But what I started realizing was music was such a great connector with kids. And so we'd talk about life stuff, but we would also sing. And Desiree's Gotta Be was also one of the hits on the radio at the time. So, you know, we'd be singing these songs and it would just open their hearts to, hey, what about this situation? Or, hey, what about this that's going on with my mom? Or what about, and we were just able to connect. And so I found, I'm a musician, I'm a singer-songwriter. That's the reason I moved to Nashville when I was in college, along with a lot of other singer-songwriters. But I realized that music is such a powerful tool for breaking down walls and really helping to get to the heart of the matter when you want to have a solid conversation with people. So Love in a Big World was born out of that. And I honestly, it was, I wanted my life to count for more than just being on stage. You know, I really wanted to make a difference in the life of, in the lives of kids. And I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I was part of a lot of work in Pittsburgh that was giving back to the community, value diversity. And so it's just in my DNA. So when I saw an opportunity here in town, I love kids and just, it goes from there.
I was going to ask you about a catalyst, if there was one, you know, for the start, but you've shared it's kind of been, it's been a part of your DNA for a while. So where did that DNA come from?
You know, it's funny that you asked that. I think I mentioned my parents were here this weekend and I was talking to my dad yesterday and my mom this weekend. I was like, you know, in large part, I am who I am because of you. We went to a multicultural church and we're reflecting on this weekend. There were a lot of biracial couples. And this was like mid 70s when it wasn't a thing, you know, but that's what I grew up with. It was my normal. Our church was located in an urban area. So all of that framed me and just my parents. Another key thing was when I was about 14, 15 years old, my mom and dad took in a little girl who was 4. And I think at the time, if I remember correctly, both her parents spent time in jail. And so she came to live with us. And it was just this incredible multicultural experience to have this little girl who was of a different race, of a different socioeconomic background, come into our home. And she was my sister. And we shared life together every day. So that really impacted me. I mean, especially because I was a teenager and that really shaped my worldview.
Well, that's a beautiful story. I appreciate you sharing that. And the church, you know, or even at home, I guess your local church in that sense, you know, those, mm-hmm. Those experiences definitely shaped you. I can hear it, you know, in your voice. I can see it because we're talking on video. So thank you for sharing, opening up and sharing those stories. I like to ask a lot of guests, you know, what they consider their biggest leadership mistake and what they learned from it. And I'm curious, you know, what you would say that is for you.
I've been in a position of leadership for a long time. And I would say my biggest mistake was in the early days. I was a control freak and I wanted to tell everybody what to do all the time and micromanage. So I've learned over the years that everybody on my team has a gift and that it behooves me to listen to their point of view. So I've gone through a lot of changes over the last 20 years to where I've learned that I'm a better leader when I let my team have their say. And when I'm also able to surround myself with people who catch the vision for what I'm doing. So I think that, you know, mission and vision have to be in alignment. I'm the one who carries the vision and the mission. It's my job to communicate that clearly. But then it's also my job to assemble a team of people who are like-minded and then see us as a collaborative group instead of me being the one who tells everybody what to do. So it's very nuanced, but it makes all the difference in the world. And it gives me a lot more freedom, joy, to give everybody a place at the table.
You know, I've been sharing this quote quite a bit, so I apologize to the listeners. The thing is, once you read or you come across something and it just absolutely, what I say, rings your leadership bell, you know, but just shakes you and you really gravitate toward it, you find yourself sharing it a lot. And I say this because you talked about a struggle being a control freak. And there's a quote from Lao Tzu, and he said that a leader is best when people barely know he exists. When his work is done, his aim fulfilled, and they will say, so the people will say, we did it ourselves. And I love that so much. That's because good. I think, you know, that leader, you have your chief responsibility to cast vision, right? Because Old Testament, Habakkuk, I think 2:2 says, write the vision down so that those who read it will run, right? Run toward it.
Yep.
The other part of, you know, that you need to understand is that if you cast such an inspiring vision that inspires already motivated people, they execute, they implement. And how cool is it that they say, look at what we accomplished, right?
Yes.
Not with Danny or Tamara, you know, any of that, but what we did. And I think that's such at the foundation of what leadership is. Before we move on to another question, I'm just curious, so what would Tamara of today tell Tamara 20 years ago, starting Love in a Big World? Like, stop being a control freak. I don't know that you'd be that direct, but what would you tell her?
That's a really good question, Danny. I would probably say, Tamara, you've got plenty of time. Be patient with yourself and be patient with the process. I think you probably can relate to this. When you're a visionary, you see it already, even before it exists. And so I've lived with this vision of what Love in a Big World is and what it's becoming since, you know, since I was just getting started in my professional career, but I could already see it. Like it was as real as you are, you know, to me, because of that ability to vision cast.
Yeah.
And I'm not the most patient person. Yeah. And so there've been so many times where I've gotten frustrated or wanted to give up or just gotten angry with the whole thing because it wasn't what I knew it was supposed to be yet. Mm-hmm. And so if I could go back and just say, Tamara, it's a process and embrace the process and learn as much as you can. Because I remember, I mean, I had people who were probably the age I am now talking to me back then, and they would say, look, you could have this great vision for leadership, but until whatever needs to be formed in you is formed so you can carry this vision, it's not going to happen.
Right.
And so I think I would tell her too, you know, this is as much about what it is you want to do as it is about you becoming who you need to be. And to give myself permission to just be. I think we put a lot of emphasis, especially when we're leaders, especially when we're ambitious leaders, we put a lot of emphasis on the doing and not always enough emphasis on the being. But I think the most effective leadership comes out of who we are, not what we try to accomplish. You know what I mean? It's like, and the most impactful work that we do really comes out of the heart and out of it. It's a flow, but there has to be authenticity in that. And that just takes time.
Yeah. And it's just that's such a tension and a challenge because as leaders, we are so how focused, right? Like how we're going to get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I work with a lot of people right now. By the time this comes out, it's already passed. But I've been doing free Friday coaching around vision. It's the summer. We're recording this in the summer. Great time to unplug from work. The rhythm is slowed down a bit, you know, and let's really cast a vision for where we're going to be personally and then professionally, you know, in the next 3 years, called a vivid vision. But the number one, you know, tip would be dream about where, right? Where you're going, not how you're going to get there. Because if you start thinking about how you're just going to get stuck. The other little tip too, I just want to throw in there for listeners for vision is if the idea seems, you know, ridiculous or just like completely wild, that deserves to be on your vision because, you know, you're probably smiling, thinking about it, and it gets you excited to tell others about it. They might even look at you like you're a little bit crazy, but they see the passion and they start getting interested as well. You know, that's the kind of kind mm-hmm. of stuff that you want to go for.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. You know, Tony Robbins is famous for saying that quality questions create a quality life. Mm-hmm. Successful people ask better questions, and as a result, mm-hmm. they get better answers. What do you think is a question that novice school leaders should be asking themselves more frequently?
I totally agree with the question asking that you're mentioning. And that's something that I've been learning, especially the last, I'd say, 5 to 7 years. It's all about the question. As leaders, I think one of the first questions is, what is my vision? What is my mission? And then broaden that to the organization. What is the vision of this organization? What is the mission of this organization? Really, to drill down even more personally, I'd say, am I a leader that others want to follow? Do I let my people know that I care? Layman and Pentac wrote a book in which they talk a lot. They make the analogy between leadership and shepherding. And they just say a leader has to take care of his sheep or her sheep. And if you don't, you're going to lose them. And it was just a really impactful little book for me that I read a couple years ago. And it's that old saying, you know, people aren't going to care unless they know how much you care. And so I think as leaders, we have to continually be asking that question of, are we willing to build the relationships that we need to? Are we willing to develop the capacity in others that they need so they can help carry the vision forward? Am I taking the time that I need to let other people know that they're valuable? And slowing down enough to make those connections, those are the kinds of questions I think are important to ask.
I love all those. And I love that, just that idea too of slowing down to make the connections, right? Not only do we always feel like we need the answer, like how are we going to get this done, but that it has to be done quickly too. And it's really leadership. It's like a crock pot, and it's a slow cook, right? You know, it's
yes.
not a microwave, an instant fix. So that's definitely something that was triggered for me when you were talking about slowing down. I really appreciate that comment. And let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizedbinder.com. All right, and we're back. And let me ask you, what's one book, video, tool, or resource that's really impacted your leadership, productivity, or quality of life this year?
You ask really good questions. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I'm going to say, you're probably going to be surprised. Like, there's a couple. So one movie that it's not a this year movie, but it's an always movie, is The Matrix. Yes, I'm a sci-fi geek. And I think that there's so much of life that we live because we're caught up in the busyness of it without detaching enough to see what is really going on. And so it's that whole idea of, let's slow down and look at the code. Let's look at what's really happening. And when we do that, we can get a better picture and be more strategic about what comes next. So The Matrix is like at the top of the list. Another would be the Snoop Dogg show on Netflix with his youth football league. And what I loved about it was that Snoop loves kids, and he made that really clear. And he was willing to put his resources behind his vision. And the fact that he is still so committed to making a difference in the lives of kids and families and communities. And it was that trifecta. It wasn't just, oh, it's just about the kids. He recognizes the systems that are at play and wants to impact the systems, but he knows it starts with the child. So that was really impactful for me too.
Gotcha. And what message would you put on all school marquees across the globe, but just for one day?
Be kind.
I was just working on I don't know if it's going to turn into a blog post, an ebook, you know, a LinkedIn whatever article, but I'm going to be 40 in July. Okay. So mm-hmm. in about 2 weeks, I actually feel great looking at that number. I know a bunch of people freak out, but I do feel a sense that I should write like 40 principles, you know, that I've learned or something. Uh-huh. Maybe uh-huh. I won't share it. I don't know. I normally pretty much share. My life's an open book. I share everything. But the one of them obviously is be kind. So that's mm-hmm. just a plus one, a kudos to you, right? Like that's such a important part of it. You know, I have a friend, Jared Ngaza, and like the one thing, he has one rule for his kids. And he says like, is this love? Are you showing love and illustrating it, representing it right now type of deal? And that's, it's the same cloth, right? Be kind. Mm-hmm. Show love, be generous, gratitude, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So listen, you made it to the end of the podcast. This is a big question. Hopefully it's not surprising you, but I'll tell you this, that I tried to take away the question once and the listeners revolted. So I've kept it in. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by any resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. So how would you build your dream school and what would be your top three priorities?
I love this question. And I actually got to sit with this question a bit when I was in graduate school. That was one of our final assignments for one of my classes.
Very cool.
Yeah. So my dream school would be to make it more like a home rather than an institution. So a smaller building that looked very much like a house filled with couches and tables. And I actually had, like, there's this place that I visited that's what I see in my mind's eye. Just a very welcoming, nurturing environment that also has multiple buildings for different functions. So it's set up more like a quad, more like you'd see on a college campus. And I would separate boys and girls. I would have the girls on one campus and the boys on another. And the reason for that is because sometimes, especially in middle school, when middle schoolers are my favorite age group, they can just distract one another from their purpose, which is learning, but have structured times that they can come together. But, you know, in class, they need to do their thing. So I would, again, you said three things that I would focus on. One would be making sure that it's a caring and nurturing environment, so that it really cultivates relationships between students and teachers and students and one another, having activities like older girls mentoring the younger girls. So it would be a multi-age campus, like it would be probably K-12, and that's the kind of school that I went to, it was K-12. And then, so a place that nurtures those relationships in everything from the physical structure to the activities that happen. Two would be, very strong emphasis and literacy in every fashion. So when we define literacy, it's reading, writing, speaking, and listening. So making sure that there are opportunities for reading the classic literature, to even decoding movies, like I was talking about earlier, or television shows, to creating. And then the other would be the arts. So a really strong focus on the arts, because I think, and let me broaden that from arts to like makerspace. So if you're not just artistically inclined, you do have an opportunity to make, because I think in our world today with where education is, kids can go and they can Google anything. So they don't need to memorize the facts and figures like we might have had to do when we were in school, but they need to be able to take the knowledge and create something new and problem solve. So I would, having that maker space. And again, like if you look at school from that dynamic, it's all about relationships, because you can't solve problems without collaboration, and you can't have collaboration if you don't have strong relationships.
Yes, that's great. And Tamara, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. You have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Thank you for giving me the opportunity, and again, for being willing to pivot at the last minute. Words of advice: enjoy the journey. Life is an adventure, and the ups and downs of it are what make it really beautiful. And the pain is what makes the joy so great. You can get a hold of me at Tamara@liveinabigworld.org, or follow me on Twitter @entrepreneurgirl or @liveinabigworld. It's the best way to reach me.
Well, better leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember, life's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Danny and Tamara. Head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Tamara in the search bar. Show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. And thanks again, Tamara, for being an awesome guest and sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better. All right, better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. I created a new resource for you called The 3 Leadership Questions I Ask Every Day. You can download the resource by visiting betterleadersbetterschools.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. This helps me in a few ways. It gives the show some social proof, it encourages new people to listen to the show, and it improves the ranking of the show and therefore helps me serve more school leaders. If you want extra credit and some good vibes, share your biggest takeaway from the show and tag me on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer, and make sure to use the hashtag BLBS. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Join over 3,000 school leaders that get this resource delivered every week. In the weekend resource, I share content curated specifically for school leaders. You'll get articles, videos, templates and exercises, coaching tips, inspirational quotes, invitations to free Friday group coaching, which is an exclusive offer made available only to newsletter subscribers in the Better Leaders, Better Schools tribe, and links to all the content I created for you this past week. You can subscribe at betterleadersbetterschools.com/weekend-resource. And remember, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader.